This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of LNG Talks. My name is Jo McCaffrey. I'm Chief Strategy and Product Officer. And I am delighted this morning to be joined by Eric Adler, CEO of LNG's asset management business. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about Eric's arrival into the firm, some of our priorities as a business, what we've been talking to the markets about and what we've been up to over the last 6 months, and then a little bit of a look ahead to what we think might be coming. So welcome, Eric. Good morning.
Well, thanks, Joe. It's a real pleasure to be here with you in this context. We know each other well, but yeah. This is a very nice context in which to be with you here.
Lovely to see you. So let's start a little bit with you and an introduction to our listeners and our viewers to who is Eric, not the CEO, but the human. So can you tell us a little bit about where you're from, where you grew up, and what brought you into finance?
Yeah, so where I grew up is an interesting question. I once did the calculation. I moved 9 times before I was 18.
Oh, wow.
We moved around a lot, so lived around all the states of the U.S. And I think when you have that kind of a background, you end up with one of two reactions. You either really want to grow roots, or you actually enjoy the adaptation period that you keep going through and learning new things. It creates a sense of curiosity. And I clearly landed in the latter camp, probably on the downside, a bit of never felt like a true insider, but felt very comfortable being an outsider, trying to understand what the cues are for new environments. Mm-hmm. And I really took that into Europe, went to grad school in Europe, got into corporate banking at first, found that a bit boring after a few years, and really learned to go with my gut, intuitively what felt right, very focused on leaders that I felt were credible. And that's what drew me into the real estate space at the down point of the French real estate market in the mid-90s. Very counterintuitive mood. Real estate was a bad word in those days, but best thing I ever did. So a great period of working through a down cycle in French real estate. Mm-hmm. From there, moved to an international investment bank, moved to London, and was able to do deals around Europe, and at various times ran the Spanish, French, Italian and German affiliates of the real estate business. So gave me a very good pan-European background. And from there, wanted to learn more about real estate, moved in to working with an integrated developer fund manager, ran Europe for that business, but really came to the conclusion that I'm a generalist. I like to work internationally. I like to work across asset classes. So moved into a global real estate business, initially running the European real estate equity, then the global piece. Had a very supportive parent who let me little by little grow that business into a private alts shop through organic growth, but also some strategic purchases. And last year thought that the next stage would be to run an entire asset management business. And that's what brought me here to LNG today.
And here you are. Well, good. I'm glad you found corporate finance boring, because corporate finance's loss is obviously asset management's gain. So tell us a bit, you touched a little bit on your personal values and how your upbringing and your background had sort of informed how you'd conducted the first part of your career. Tell us a little bit more about that. What are some of the things that you learned early on in your career that you've really sort of held on to? And is there anything you think that shifted as you've moved through your career into the position you are now?
Yeah, I'd say first, humility is key. And I think I learned that, again, my upbringing, we went up and down the socioeconomic chain, a very volatile career path my father had. And so I learned to work with very different people, collaborate with all kinds of people, different cultures. And what you learn is that they all work. If anyone who's standing today has been successful, and I think that's something I've brought into all of my roles, is to not judge necessarily based on what I'm used to, but really try to understand the cues of the environment I'm in. And I've actually found that very rewarding. And as you learn and add different experiences, it just increases your ability to think holistically across different situations. And I think going from the technical as you're more junior into taking this holistic view of things and understanding different cultural dynamics and how diverse backgrounds can work together, I think is a real strength. It's been the strength I've used most probably effectively as I've moved across my career so far.
So Eric, you're multilingual as well. You're a multilingual American. Tell us about that.
Well, moving to France, I really fell for the country and wanted to understand it as well as possible. There's only one way to do it, is to learn the language. So yeah. I really dug in. And so French is my most comfortable language after English, or sadly American when you hear my accent. But then from there, worked quite a bit about 20 years ago for in Italy. And again, with my experience from France, I really dug in wanted to learn, wanted to be conversant in Italian. So feel like I'm pretty comfortable in Italian. And from there, spent time in Germany, much tougher language to learn
tough
intuitively.
One.
So I think I have some notions in Germany I can get by. And then in Spain, because of the French and Italian, I can kind of manage. But it pales in comparison to some of the people I've met in terms of real fluency in multiple languages.
Yeah.
I think I'm just at the beginnings of that journey. And
the
at this
polyglots.
Point, I don't know if I'll get much further.
Yeah,
so.
Fantastic. So 6 months into LNG, you've just passed your 6-month anniversary. Tell us a bit about what brought you to LNG. How did that conversation begin and what made you decide to pull the trigger and accept the role?
Yeah, so again, really wanted to run a global asset manager overall, and looking for the right cultural fit. And I really found that with LNG. I think the history of the firm, its belief in client importance, but over the long term, managing through cycles, really meant a lot to me. And I felt a real connection with the people I met from the beginning of my interviews at LNG, and everything I heard about the business. Obviously, a great franchise, leading business, largest asset manager in the UK, one of the leading players in Europe, breadth of capabilities. As I do diligence, very good investment track record across all of the different strategies. These were very important factors. So very excited about the opportunity, but the clincher for me was the symbiotic relationship that's being put in place with the insurer. I think that is very much one of the big mega trends we're seeing in the industry, this coming together of the insurance and asset management businesses. Many of the big U.S. private alternatives players are very focused on that. We've been doing that for years, so I thought that was a huge advantage. And importantly, since Antonio Samos joined the business as CEO 18 months ago, he has taken that mutually reinforcing business model and really pushed that as a key part of the strategy.
Yeah.
I think that's to the benefit of all of the different businesses, and asset management's no exception. So all of that really pushed me to think this was a very big opportunity, and I was excited to join.
That's great. And 6 months in, we had the pleasure and I think it was a pleasure in the end of doing our investor deep dive day, where we went on a capital markets event to talk to our investors and the market more generally about our plans for the future. We reflected in that, obviously, some of your initial reflections and what gave you optimism for the future about our business. For any of our listeners and viewers that haven't had a chance to watch that replay, though, I would encourage them to do so. For any that haven't yet, can you talk a little bit about why that Capital Markets Day was important and what you spoke to the market about? What are you most excited about for our forward-looking strategy?
Yeah, sure. Well, first and foremost, it was a gut check for myself after 6 months in terms of the reasons why I joined. That had to be confronted with the actual experience of being here, working through the business, working with my colleagues. And I came away very optimistic about the potential for this business. When you think about some of the big mega trends that are happening in the industry, demographics mean we have aging population. So the retirement space is only going to become more important. We're an absolute leader in retirement across the board in defined benefits, defined contribution. I mentioned earlier this convergence between the insurance and asset management businesses. We've been in that space for a very long time and are creating tremendous synergies in the way we approach it. The barbell, we're in an environment now where the most sophisticated investors in the world, whether they're institutional or the distribution networks that asset managers like us work with, they're looking to do more and more with fewer and fewer managers across asset classes and across geographies. And so a business like L&G Asset Management has that geographical spread, but importantly, the breadth of capabilities. We're very strong in index on one end of the barbell. Mm-hmm. We have a strong privates business. That's my background. So I'm obviously here to make that even stronger. But in between these two ends of the barbell, we have the active fixed income capabilities. We're well known for our multi-asset and solutions capabilities, LDI, derivatives, overlays. All of these things put together are going to allow us to work with clients in a way that that's really the way it's going. It's all going in this direction of the large players wanting to do many things with fewer asset managers. We're going to be in a very good position to do that. And so now getting under the hood of that really came out with three areas of untapped potential. And the first is this dominant position we have in the UK. We are the leader. We are strong across all of the different distribution channels in terms of who we can distribute our products to. We have this breadth of capabilities. We're the leading LDI player in the defined benefit space. We are the leader when working with our retail sister division, if you will, in the defined contribution space. So you put all that together, we have a very strong domestic base from which to move internationally. And we've planted our flag already internationally everywhere we really want to be. And so the untapped part of that potential is deciding where we're going to double down, where we're going to focus more of our energies internationally going forward. We're already well present, but we can probably take certain client relationships and move into more value-added strategies with them and push more deeply into some of the wealth, the wholesale, some of the more retail-type channels around the world. That's just a huge strength we have, and I think we can lean into that and make it even more of a strength. Secondly, is this mutually reinforcing business model? We are working incredibly symbiotically with our institutional retirement business. They are the leading pension risk transfer business in the world. And 80% of the new pension risk transfer deals they win are clients today of L&G Asset Management.
Yes,
so that is a very strong relationship we're working with. And I think we can do more to work even more closely together. That's equally the case in the workplace solutions area with our retail sister company. And again, we're the leader across that space. That's the DC space is looking for seamless solutions from end to end across the whole life cycle, all the way through accumulation and into decumulation, and a service provision that really can offer everything that a DC client would want to have. We have all of that in house, and we're working more and more closely with our parent to do that. And then the final piece is this breadth of capabilities. We can really solve the largest clients' needs. And the real goal going forward is to fill in some gaps because we have quite a spread, but there are some areas we think we can fill in some capabilities we haven't had to date.
So Eric, you've talked a little bit about private markets since coming to L&G. It's obviously your background. You're deeply tenured in private markets firms across asset classes. Tell us a little bit about what your initial views of L&G's private markets businesses so far. You've been in 6 months. How has that impression formed over that time?
Well, first of all, the potential here is tremendous, and it really stems from a decision made before I joined to put together two different aspects of our asset management capabilities. The traditional third-party asset management business that did have a very strong third-party real estate capability and also had built a very strong investment-grade private credit origination capability across Europe and across different asset classes they could lend to, as well as in the U.S. And they put that together with an in-house privates business that was really built on L&G's balance sheet. And it was a business that moved into some pretty cutting-edge areas, whether that was in real estate, in clean power, in nature, lending to nature, some emerging markets, nature's opportunities. And they were building vertically integrated operating capabilities in some of those areas, also taking some strategic minority stakes in some best-in-class operators. The merger of those two allowed us to take these in-house capabilities we grew and matched them with a world-class global distribution network. And so the job now is to take a lot of that potential, take the backing we have from our parent, our insurance parent, that can continue to provide a seed capital to incubate or to catalyze in-house capabilities into third-party funds that our clients are going to be interested in. And so already just within that, there's tremendous amount of potential to grow into areas like digital infrastructure. We've already taken some operating capabilities we have in the living sectors here in the UK, whether that's build to rent or affordable housing, and turn that into third-party business. And we also have a strategic stake in Pemberton, which is a leading sub-investment grade direct lending and private credit player in Europe. So you put all that together, and there's tremendous potential to take what's already a £57 billion business and grow it significantly.
And zooming out a little bit, when we think about macro trends impacting private markets, what are the ones that you're most interested in? What are the ones you're keeping an eye on and think have real potential for our business and more generally for private markets investors?
Yeah. So if you think about demographics, we talked about it. So aging population, that pushes a lot towards various types of living concepts. We know there's a structural lack of supply in housing of all sorts, and that is a global phenomenon. That exists in Asia, across Europe, in the U.S. So I think we're going to continue to want to play into that theme. Digitalization, the increased use of technology, whether that's smart cities to power the needs of this digitalization. So that could be data centers and then infrastructure of all sorts. Really feel across the board, there's been a structural underinvestment, particularly in Europe and the U.S. in infrastructure. And there's going to be a massive catch-up effect that's going to continue in the years and decades to come. And I think we're in a very good position to play into those spaces from a private standpoint. And I'd say the other piece is this convergence of public and private credit. They've historically been considered separate asset classes. The rise of the non-bank lending sector, as it's grown and matured, it is starting to be able to offer alternatives to some traditional types of lending that were done, not just from banks, but out of the public markets. Yeah. And I think you're seeing a convergence between the two. And our active fixed income capabilities, along with our private credit origination capabilities, over time, figuring out how to pull those together in the way that's most beneficial to clients is going to be another big part of our strategy going forward, and an area which we should have a real strength.
Yeah. And that leads us nicely onto my next question, which is around who is buying private markets. So traditionally, institutions have always been the primary buyers of private markets, usually because they are the only ones who are able to lock their capital for the long duration periods of time that are often required for long-term projects, long-term financing. But increasingly, we're seeing a push from wealth investors or smaller investors who want to be able to diversify their public portfolio, who want to be able to invest in long-term investment in their own economies or in economies elsewhere. And that has grown the demand for and the issuance of new types of product. But it doesn't come easily, does it? It's not an easy process to sort of democratize those alts investments. What are your thoughts on that increasing allocation of wealth and smaller investors into what has traditionally been the purview of institutions?
Yeah, this democratization of privates is a trend that is already picked up in strength in the US, and it's coming globally. We're feeling it in Europe. We're starting to see the beginnings of it in the UK, and a lot of the Asian private wealth channels are also very focused on it. So we fully believe that that is a wave of the future, and we're particularly well-placed to do that, A, because of the diversity of distribution channels and relationships we already have. We do have a lot of ability to tap into some of these non-institutional channels, but the important thing will be to find the right format for these products. These are high barrier to entry, highly illiquid. They're complicated to execute, so the fees by nature, the cost to execute these strategies is higher. So you think about the illiquidity and the overall cost, and you have to find a way to create more liquidity and make it more cost efficient for these channels. And the right way to do that is a savvy mixture of these illiquid, high barrier to entry private strategies with lower cost, a lot of times passive or index capabilities that are much more efficient in terms of allocation, highly liquid. And we're in a very good position to do that. We have all of the capabilities in-house. We have the relationships with the distribution networks. And we're already doing some pretty cutting edge things, particularly in our defined contribution space. Yeah.
So your first 6 months has coincided with quite an interesting time in markets, if we can put it that way. Never a dull day at the moment. So that vol is obviously causing our clients and investors worldwide concerns. What are you hearing when you speak to investors and how, you know, what's your perspective on how to navigate what is a really difficult time in markets at the moment?
Yeah, I think the first thing we hear from investors is that they tend to want to just carry on, right? And you're seeing that we did have a bit of a precipitous drop in the markets at the midpoint of this first half of the year, but things have picked up again. So I'd say the markets overall are more resilient than we tend to give them credit for in the face of some of this macro or geopolitical economic uncertainty. The other point I'd say, and this is having been in the markets for a very long time, when people talk about unprecedented volatility or uncertainty, I think we use that word a bit too much. We've been through a lot, right? We've been through a global financial crisis. We've been through COVID. We in the UK went through a pretty challenging gilts crisis not that long ago. You had the first dot-com bubble, 9/11. You had the Asian crisis in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Hedge funds imploding in the late 90s and having global impact. So for us, given we're a long-term player, our approach to all of that is to never try to predict. We're always trying to be prepared. And we have all of the capabilities we need. We have great multi-asset class capabilities that are looking at commodities, interest rates, any of the debt or equity markets around the world, currencies, you name it, and also plugging in the geopolitical and sort of macro trends, whether that's deglobalization, nearshoring. There's all these trends that you have to think about. And we're very well placed to take all of that and come up with a portfolio allocation that hopefully allows us to take advantage of some near-term opportunities that are created by the volatility, but importantly, to create a risk-return framework and a diversified framework that allows us to handle pretty much anything that comes our way. Even if there are times when it's clear in the last 5 or 6 years, the best thing to do was to buy seven very large tech stocks in the U.S. That was the highest performing strategy. And of course, we had our exposure to that, but we're never going to want to be all in because when markets do change and in times like this of volatility, you can't predict what's going to happen next. And again, back to why I joined, we've been here 189 years. And I think our approach of preparing and not predicting is the fruit of that. We've been through so many up and down cycles in our history, and we're here to make sure we're going to be here for another 189 years.
Okay, so been great to getting to know you, Eric. We wanted to finish with some very insightful, very difficult questions about your personal life. So let's kick off. Are you a dog or a cat person?
Oh, dog.
Dog. 100. A specific breed?
Big, cuddly, yes.
Big cuddly dogs.
Big cuddly dogs.
Understood.
Yeah.
Fully
full of life.
Also a dog person here, so no arguments. Beach or pool?
Beach.
Agreed. North or southern France? Difficult.
That's difficult. North.
Northern France. Yes. Favorite place?
Within France, probably Brittany. But go even further north. Some of the best holidays I've had have been in Scandinavia in the summertime. Unbelievable.
Lovely. Yeah. French or Italian to speak?
French.
French or Italian for eating?
Ooh, Italian. I don't know if I might just create an enemy at home.
Yeah, exactly. Don't tell your wife. Yeah, exactly.
Italian. Hard to beat.
Exactly. Coming home to France, pain au chocolat or croissant?
Croissant all the way.
Classic. Great. So that's it for today. Thanks ever so much for everybody for joining us. Thanks very much to Eric for his time. Great to get to know him and looking forward to seeing you on the next edition. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities, Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.